The parade's organizers had thoughtfully provided a gravity sled for them, and Owen and Hazel floated down the main street, just high enough to be out of reach of the crowd's grasping hands. There had been unfortunate incidents in the past. People, maddened by the sheer proximity of their heroes, had surged forward past the guards and made a grab for bits of clothing, curls of hair, or anything else detachable that might serve as a souvenir. After Hazel showed an understandable but regrettably violent way of dealing with such fans, it was decided that everyone concerned would be a whole lot safer if the crowd's heroes were kept up out of reach on a vehicle. Owen smiled and waved like an automaton, and distanced himself from the din and bedlam as best he could by concentrating on the report he was going to make to Parliament. He'd never liked crowds. People staring at him made him feel nervous and self-conscious. Once in his old life, when he'd had to make a speech to a gathering of historical scholars, he'd locked himself in the toilet for so long they'd had to send someone to ask if he was all right. It should have been different now. He was a man of power and destiny. Everyone said so. He'd fought his way through whole armies of imperial troops and never once hesitated. It didn't make any difference. He still hated being stared at. It didn't help that Hazel was really into it, waving and smiling and turning back and forth so everyone could get a good look at her. A whole group of Hazel lookalikes was chanting her name and squealing ecstatically whenever she smiled in their direction. Some of them were even women. Someone threw her a long-stemmed rose. She caught it deftly, avoiding the thorns, and blew the thrower a kiss. The crowd loved that. Owen pretended not to see, while noting grumpily that no one was throwing him roses. Not that he wanted any, of course. It was just the principle of the thing. Rebuilding was going on all around, as houses and shops and offices damaged or destroyed during the last great battle in the city were being repaired. Work went on 24 hours a day, but the job seemed never-ending. Workers in anti-grav slings high up on the sides of buildings leaned dangerously out of their harnesses to shout coarse comments at Hazel. She shouted even coarser ones back. They loved it. Up ahead, a brass band was oompawing away with great enthusiasm, but was largely drowned out by the roar of the crowds. Cameras were shooting back and forth overhead, and occasionally getting into butting contests over the best angles. Owen smiled till his mouth ached, and kept a constant suspicious eye on the unfinished buildings for possible snipers. The adulation of the crowd was all very well, but there were a lot of people out there who would love to see Owen and Hazel conveniently dead, for all sorts of reasons. And besides, the approval of the crowds didn't fool him. He knew what was behind some of it. With so many dead on both sides, and a somewhat more liberal government in charge, for the first time ever, transplants were available for everyone. There was a near endless supply of spare parts on ice, and even with the extremely long waiting lists, people who would otherwise have been left to die now had new hope. And who had been responsible for all the bodies? Owen and Hazel. There was an even darker side than that to the acclamation. Inspired by Owen's and Hazel's more than human abilities, many in the general populace had been moved to improve themselves by all means possible. These maze wannabes had taken to blood, tech implants, and supplantive surgery with an enthusiasm that bordered on the macabre. Owen didn't approve, but there didn't seem to be anything he could do about it. As Hazel pointed out, that was fashion for you. In return, Owen had said something very cutting about fashion and lemmings, and did his best to keep an eye on the trend. It struck him as a fad that could get dangerously out of control, and he hadn't saved humanity from the Empress Lionstone just to see people turn themselves into minor league Hayden men. The phrase Parade of the Endless seemed to take on new meaning, but eventually they came to the centuries-old building that housed Parliament. Since no one had taken Parliament at all seriously for the same amount of time, the great square edifice was tucked away in a usually quiet backwater, and the general fighting and destruction had largely passed it by. The tall stone walls were overgrown with thick mats of ivy that no one ever dared prune because of the real possibility that it was only the ivy that was holding the old building together. As Owen and Hazel approached Parliament, troops moved in to shut off the crowds and hold them back as the heroes stepped down from the gravity sled and made their way hurriedly into the lobby of the government building. The great oak door shut firmly behind them, and the noise of the crowd was immediately shut off. Owen breathed a quiet sigh of relief. His arm ached from waving, and he didn't think he had a smile left in him. Facing an undoubtedly hostile parliament didn't bother him nearly as much as hysterical crowd shouting that they loved him and wanted to have his babies. Waiting servants bowed to Owen and Hazel and led them through the sumptuously furnished lobby to the great outer chamber, where everyone with business before Parliament was waiting with varying degrees of patience for the evening session to get underway. Everyone who was anyone, and others who thought they might or should be someone, was there. Parliament drew even more would-be movers and shakers than Lionstone's court, not least because Parliament wasn't likely to outright kill you if they thought you shouldn't be there. They just bored you to death. Everyone knew that Parliament had inherited the day-to-day running of the Empire pretty much by accident. All the other contenders were so busy fighting among themselves, they effectively canceled each other out, and so only Parliament was left. So far, they were doing as good a job as anybody else might have. The 250 MPs who made up Parliament, elected by all those above a certain yearly income who could be bothered to vote, hadn't had any real power for a long time, and reacted to their new status with mixed enthusiasm. Some threw themselves into the job with gusto, determined to show what they could do given a chance. Others reacted strongly at the very thought of actually having to work for a living, and drew so far back into their shells that no amount of knocking or coaxing could convince them to come out. Most cheerfully advertised themselves for sale to the highest bidder. Some even floated themselves on the stock exchange. Certainly there was no shortage of organizations, factions, and powerful individuals trying to influence the MPs in one way or another for any number of reasons. So much so, armed guards had had to be installed in and around Parliament to keep the peace, especially during budget debates. The members of Parliament's first act had been to raid the public purse to hire publicity experts to help them present themselves in the best possible light. Their oratory skills had grown somewhat rusty, eroded by the certain knowledge that no one was listening to them, and they all knew they needed to look their best if they were to appear worth supporting. Or bribing. Many had blossomed in the new blaze of attention and publicity, and became well-liked, if not trusted, public figures. Politics had never been such fun. The MPs had even begun creating their own political parties, usually with themselves at the head, to provide voices for those wishing to be heard in Parliament, and the general populace flocked to support them. The MPs hadn't yet, for the most part, realized that they could now be a voice themselves if they wanted. But, this being Golgotha, everyone was just waiting for the penny to drop. Outside Parliament, things were getting violent. Seeing too late that Parliament had seized the only real political ground, the various remaining factions had taken to settling their quarrels by brute force. The body count in the streets rose every day, as swords, guns, bombs, and poison decided who was currently on top. The authorities had stopped trying to enforce the peace, except during the morning and evening rush hours. These days, more than ever, people had to be able to get to and from work safely. Both sides bandied the word terrorist freely, while plotting atrocities of their own. In such a crowded field, publicity was everything. Owen and Hazel had considered getting involved and killing lots of people until the others got the point, but Jack Random had talked them out of it. Practically the only thing the different factions had in common was their disapproval of Owen and Hazel as possible competitors for power. No one wanted to risk giving the factions the only thing they might actually unite behind, namely the assassination of Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark. The only real competition Parliament had as a governing body were the war trials, presided over by leading figures from the rebel undergrounds. Under Lionstone's evil rule, all kinds of atrocities had become commonplace, and brutal and sadistic men and women had come to power and thrived in that dark atmosphere. People could disappear for any or no reason, and never be seen again. Torture and murder were everyday matters of state under the Iron Bitch. Once she fell, and the rebel leaders had access to the palace records, the names of these vile oppressors became known, and long-delayed retribution began. The underground would put a face on holovision, along with the relevant address, and they were dragged from their rich apartments or hunted through the streets. Many met bloody and awful ends, and the rest hurried to surrender themselves to the authorities, the only place where they could hope to find protection. They still thought they could cut themselves deals by betraying each other, and only realized too late that they were to be shown no more mercy than they had shown their countless victims. The war trials began within hours of Lionstone's fall, and were holovised every day in full, so that the people could see justice being done. Everyone watched. Everyone had lost someone, or knew someone who had. The trials went on, and there seemed to be no shortage of the accused, no matter how fast the courts hanged them. The public hangings attracted huge, mostly silent crowds, as though the people needed to see the bastards die for themselves before they could believe it to be true. Parliament was more than a little jealous of the war trials, both for the power they wielded and the attention they took away from the sessions, but they knew better than to interfere. The war trials were even more popular than the arenas, an unprecedented situation on Golgotha. Even more than justice, the people needed vengeance. Owen and Hazel came to the Great Chamber, the last room before entering the floor of the house itself. When Owen and Hazel made their entrance, everything stopped. Owen and Hazel looked calmly about them in the silence and inclined their heads politely. Everyone turned away, and the babble of conversation resumed. No one was interested in talking to the Death Stalker or the Dark Woman. It wasn't safe, for all kinds of reasons. The chamber was separated from Parliament proper by an ancient, massive oak door that, by long tradition, was only ever opened from the inside. The MPs used this privilege to keep people waiting as long as possible, to remind them of their place in the new scheme of things. It was a practice they'd borrowed from Lionstone, though that, of course, was never mentioned. The huge chamber's wood-paneled walls were covered with portraits of previous politicians, and the dead eyes of long-gone non-entities glowered disapprovingly down at the raucous crowd filling the hall. Everyone was looking for contacts, trying to make a deal or talk up some new opportunity. There were no hollow images. Everyone had to be there in person. In these days of clones, aliens, and fury imposters, people like to be sure of exactly who they were talking with. ESP blockers were installed in hidden locations just to keep everyone honest, and to hell with whether it upset the Esper underground. Owen and Hazel moved unhurriedly forward into the chamber, and without quite looking around, everyone made room for them. The usual warm greeting.
Ungrateful bastards.
Hazel craned her neck hopefully to see if anyone present was stupid enough to take offense. They do have their reasons for not liking us. After all, I murdered my own ancestor, the heroic and much-revered Giles Deathstalker, and you used to be a clone legger. Heroes and role models are supposed to be pure and unsullied. I fear we came as something of a disappointment.
My heart bleeds. I never claimed to be a hero. For 2 pins, I'd walk out of here, and Parliament could whistle for its report. Hell, for 3 pins, I'd burn the place down as well before I left.
Owen smiled unconcernedly for the benefit of the chamber.
Steady, steady. Don't let them get to you. Never let them think they can intimidate or influence you. They take it as a sign of weakness.
Anyone sees me as weak and tries to take advantage of it, they'll be carrying their lungs home in a bucket.
Get your hand away from your sword, dammit. You can't kill anyone here. Duels are forbidden. You even start to draw your sword and 50 guards will appear from everywhere. It's the only way they can keep discussions here from spilling over into deadly insults and challenges. Even we're not exempt. I do wish you'd keep up on the changes, Hazel.
You know you'd love a chance to make a speech to me. Besides, I can handle 50 guards.
Yes, you probably could, but that's not the point. We are trying to make a good impression.
Since when?
Since we failed yet again to bring back Valentine Wolf for trial.
Is it okay if I just half-kill someone?
If you must. Only try to do it when the holovision cameras aren't looking. We really don't need any more bad publicity.
Don't think I've ever seen so many cameras here before. Either Parliament's got something really juicy lined up, or someone told them we were coming. Hello, I spy a familiar face.
And she plunged off into the crowd, shouldering people out of her way if they didn't move fast enough. Owen followed her, murmuring polite apologies as he went. It was a practice he was growing increasingly used to. The familiar face turned out to be Tobias Schreck, accompanied as always by his news cameraman, Flynn. Owen joined Hazel in greeting them, smiling genuinely for the first time since he'd entered the chamber. Toby Schreck had been a news reporter during the rebellion and had demonstrated an uncanny ability to turn up in just the right place at just the right time, with Flynn always there at his shoulder to broadcast it all live. They'd covered a lot of the fighting Owen and Hazel had been involved in, and had even been there when the rebels finally threw down the Empress Lionstone and destroyed the Iron Throne forever. Toby looked much the same as ever, a fat, perspiring butterball of a man with slicked down blonde hair and a ready smile. He was wearing fashionable clothes of the very finest cut, tailored to disguise as much of his great girth as possible, but they didn't suit him. He was more used to the easy casualness of combat fatigues, and it showed. Flynn was the same tall, gangling sort, with a deceptively honest face. A quiet, retiring man in the field, he tended to fade into the background when working, a useful trait when people were firing guns all around you. His private life was another matter entirely.
Looking good, Toby.
Hazel cheerfully poked a playful finger into his more than ample stomach.
Lost a few pounds, have we?
I wish. Ever since I allowed myself to be promoted to management and ended up practically running Imperial News, I spend most of my time sitting behind a desk instead of getting out in a field where I belong.
Right. You used to spend all your time in the field whinging and grousing about all the comforts you were missing.
Toby glared at him.
Straight speaking like that is why you're still a cameraman, while I am now management. And don't contradict me again in public, or I'll have someone in accounting take a really close look at your expense claims for last year.
Bully.
You're looking very smart, Toby. Right on the cutting edge of fashion.
Don't you start. I know what I look like. Why do you think I always wore fatigues in the past? Every time I wear something good, I look like I stole it.
Hazel didn't bother to hide her smile.
So what's management doing here? Parliament planning something special, is it? Something perhaps we ought to know about?
Right. What do you know that we don't?
Volumes. But for once, I'm as much in the dark as you. I'm really only here because I felt a desperate need to get out in the real world for a while. I've been feeling bored just lately, to tell you the truth. It's all so different these days. My work with Flynn during the Rebellion has already been hailed as classic material. It has its own place in the historical archives, and at any given time, it's a safe bet that somewhere, some station is still running it. The public can't get enough of it. The royalties are coming in faster than even I can spend them. So much money that even the company accountants can't hide it all. Flynn and I never need work again if we don't want to. But...
Yeah?
But we're too young to retire. I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Right. And I can't help being haunted by the horrible suspicion that perhaps I've already done my life's best work. Hell of a thing to feel at my age. I need a real story. Something I can get my teeth into. Something that matters.
We're rebuilding a whole empire, pretty much from the ground up. Our whole political and social structure is changing day by day. I can't believe you can't find a story worth covering.
Oh, there's no shortage of news. History in the making and all that. But it's all so bloody worthy and open and honest and dull. Where's the fun in that? Where's the drama? Everyone I meet nowadays seems so small after the great figures I've followed in the Rebellion. Even a villain's a second-rate nowadays.
No, I wouldn't say that. Valentine Wolfe is still out there somewhere.
Ah, yes. I'd heard you had another run-in with him. I'm looking forward to hearing your report on that. At least you two are still around, making waves. Everyone else has pretty much disappeared. Jack Random is too busy playing politics to get into any real trouble. And Ruby Journey rarely leaves her house. Though word has it, they may be making an appearance here today. Maybe they've heard something. God, I've got some great footage of the four of you in action during the Rebellion. Stuff that never saw the light of day. Maybe when we're all safely dead.
Yeah, maybe. But until then, I think some secrets should stay hidden. People don't need to know everything that went on.
There was a certain amount of sage nodding. Nobody mentioned the fake young Jack Random, who turned out to be a Fury in disguise, a cyborg working for the rogue AIs of Shub. But they all knew they were thinking of the moment when Flynn's camera had caught the machine's unmasking. And there were other, darker secrets, too. The Rebellion hadn't been nearly as straightforward as most people thought.
So, have either of you thought any more about my offer to make official documentaries of your lives? There's so much rubbish out there with your names and faces on it, you need to get the true story established while it's still fresh. We are talking serious money here, people. You don't have to worry about the writing. We have people for that. Just talk into a recorder and we'll arrange the material and dig up footage to go with it. We can fake some linking material to cover the areas you don't want to talk about. All you have to do is narrate over the final footage. Easy money. Get it while it's going. Who knows how much longer people are going to stay interested in you.
The sooner everyone loses interest in us, the better. No biographies, Toby. We have little enough privacy as it is. Besides, most of my life story isn't suitable for a mass audience anyway.
I can quite believe that. Let's change the subject rapidly. How's your life, Toby? Doing anything interesting apart from your work?
Him. He doesn't have a life outside of his work. First in, last out, and takes work home with him. Typical management. I work the union-approved hours only. And once I clock out, I won't even think about work again till I clock in the next morning. You should have stayed at work and grunt like me, boss. Far less pressure.
You never did have any ambition.
Damn right, and proud of it. Ambition just gets you into trouble and takes over your life. Which is why you have bags under your eyes and incipient ulcers, and I have a wonderful new lover in my life. You really must come round and meet him sometime. His name's Clarence. Clarence Dubois. Works as a researcher for the MP John Avon, one of the few marginally honest members of Parliament. My Clarence does all the real work, of course, so Avon can look good on the floor of the House. But that's the way of the world for you. He's very handsome, and a marvellous cook. The things he can do with a fresh joint and a few vegetables.
Love seems to agree with you. It's made you positively chatty.
Don't I know it? I've been hearing about bloody Clarence for weeks. And how are you two lovebirds getting on,
If you find out, let me know. I've never understood our relationship.
We're taking things day by day. So, how about you, Toby? Anyone special on the horizon?
I have been considering a clan marriage just lately. On the grounds that I'm not getting any younger, and my family's been putting the pressure on about where the next generation of the family's going to come from. With Uncle Gregor forced into hiding, Grace an avowed old maid, and Evangeline disowning the family, the line pretty much ends with me. But who'd marry a Shrek? Thanks to dear Uncle Gregor and his appalling ways, the family name has become mud in all the circles that matter.
No, none of that, boss. You're Toby the Troubadour, rich and famous journalist of note, not just a Shrek. Work is all very well, but in the end there's no substitute for getting out and meeting a nice girl. Or boy. Or whatever.
Owen was so busy watching Toby glow bright red with embarrassment that he didn't notice the approaching young aristo till the man was practically on top of him. Hazel noticed. It took a lot to distract Hazel. She tapped Owen surreptitiously on the arm with one hand, while the other fell to the gun on her hip. Owen turned unhurriedly and stopped the approaching aristo in his tracks with a steady gaze and a raised eyebrow. The young man bowed formally, keeping his hand well away from the sword at his side. He was dressed well, but unimaginatively, his long metallic hair already out of fashion. His blandly handsome face was studiously unreadable.
Sir Deathstalker, my apologies for imposing on you, but there is someone nearby who desires to make your acquaintance.
Huh. Then that makes him pretty much unique in this company.
It is the Lady Constance Wolfe. She wishes to speak with you urgently on a matter of some importance to you both. May I lead you to her?
Constance Wolfe? Don't think I know her. What relation is she to Valentine?
Technically speaking, she's his mother. She married Valentine's father, Jacob, late in his life. With Valentine on the run, Daniel missing, and Stephanie discredited, Constance runs Clan Wolfe these days. I never met the woman. Can't think what we might have in common. Still, I'd better go and see what she wants. Never know when you might learn something useful.
Watch your back. She's still a wolf.